Welcome back, everyone. Ready for another deep dive?
Always.
Awesome. Today, we're heading to 19th century India. It's a really interesting period, full of change and resistance, you know, kind of the birth of a movement that would completely change the country.
Definitely a pivotal time.
Yeah, so we're talking early Indian nationalist movements, particularly between 1857 and 1900. We're going to be looking at what led to this movement, the people who stood up to British rule, and how those ideas, you know, carried through history.
And how those actions influenced what India is today, like stepping back in time to see how it all began.
Exactly. Okay, so let's start with India, under the East India Company, which basically ran things from 1772 to 1850. It's wild how this company went from being all about trade and spices and profit to becoming the government.
Yeah, it's an interesting shift from merchants to rulers. I think the appointment of Warren Hastings in 1772 as the first governor general was a key moment. They suddenly had to rule this huge, diverse population. Quite a change from just focusing on trade deals.
That's got to be like a crash course in ruling a country. I bet it was a challenge to try and manage a place and its people when they really only knew about trade agreements before.
It was. And, you know, they didn't fully understand the systems they were trying to replace, so they ended up adopting parts of that Mughal system that they thought was despotic.
Really?
Yeah, they kept that intricate revenue collection and still used local elites as middlemen, even though they initially saw those practices as problems. And that mix of systems, well, it had lasting effects on how Indian administration developed.
It's kind of ironic, trying to replace a system while also using parts of it.
Yeah, and they tried to legitimize their rule by holding on to some of those existing power structures.
Like how?
Well, they kept using the Mughal emperor's image on their coins, and Persian was still the official language. It was like acknowledging his authority, even though they were the ones in control.
It's like playing both sides. But then, in the mid-1800s, things took a pretty dramatic turn, right?
Definitely. 1857, that's a turning point. The Sepoy Mutiny, as it's called, really shook British rule to its core. It wasn't just a military rebellion, though. It kind of sparked this new sense of national identity among Indians and this desire for them to rule themselves.
And even when the East India Company was disbanded in 1858 and the British Crown took over directly, those underlying problems didn't just disappear.
Exactly. It wasn't that simple. The anger and frustration among Indians, especially the educated elite who were being shut out of positions of power, just kept growing. And that's where we see these incredible individuals emerge, reformers and revolutionaries who fought for Indian rights and basically set the stage for the whole independence movement.
People who dared to challenge the way things were.
Right. Like Syed Ahmad Khan, for example.
Right.
He had a really interesting approach. He believed in Western education as a way to empower Muslims, but at the same time, he remained loyal to the British crown.
So working within the system while also trying to change it from the inside?
In a way, yes. He saw engaging with Western knowledge as crucial for progress, even while pushing for more autonomy within British India. His ideas really influenced Muslim reformers and leaders who came after him.
It makes me think of Surendranath Banerjee. He was denied entry into the Indian civil service on these flimsy grounds, and that just fueled his activism.
Yeah. Banerjee's experience, it really showed the frustration of so many educated Indians being excluded from the system, the very system that claimed to be based on merit. Solidified his belief in the need for Indians to have more representation and ultimately to govern themselves. And he went on to found the Indian Association in Calcutta, which became a crucial platform for nationalist ideas and a kind of forerunner to the Indian National Congress.
So alongside these individuals, we also see all these local and regional organizations popping up dedicated to promoting Indian interests.
Yes, exactly. Groups like the Triplicane Literary Society, the Mahajana Sabha, the Pune Sarvajanik Sabha, they were all over the country. They engaged in these dialogues with the British government, pushing for more Indian involvement in their own governance and reforms in education and administration.
Like this rising tide of activism pushing for change. And it all culminated in the formation of the Indian National Congress in 1885.
A crucial moment, for sure. The Congress brought together all these different voices within this growing nationalist movement, creating a unified platform. Of course, even within the Congress itself, there were debates and disagreements.
Makes sense. No movement is perfectly unified.
Yeah.
We see these different ideological groups emerging, right? The moderates and the extremists. Could you break that down a little more?
Sure. The moderates, well, they preferred a slower, more gradual approach. They wanted to work within the existing system, advocating for reforms through things like petitions and dialogue with the British. The extremists, on the other hand, they wanted complete independence and weren't afraid to be more aggressive, sometimes even using violence to get there.
So two different approaches to achieving a shared goal. And then on top of that, you have the rise of the Hindu Mahapa, adding another layer of complexity.
Absolutely. The Hindu Mahasabha, initially, they supported the Congress's call for non-cooperation. But later on, they went in a different direction, advocating for Hindu unity and a more assertive approach, often against what they saw as Muslim interests.
Wow. So even within this shared desire for independence, there were disagreements about what that independent India should look like and how to get there. It's fascinating how these different visions started shaping the whole landscape of the movement.
Absolutely. To understand India today, you need to understand these nuances, the legacies of these early nationalists with their different ideas, sometimes clashing visions, and how they still resonate in the country's politics and society. It's a complex legacy.
It's been a fascinating journey already, and we've only just scratched the surface. We've seen how the discontent during East India Company rule turned into organized movements demanding change and self-rule. And we've met some of those incredible people who stood up for Indian interest and laid the groundwork for the whole independence movement.
And there's so much more to explore. The nationalist movement kept evolving, facing new challenges and opportunities in the years that followed. But those foundations laid by these early pioneers, their courage, their vision, their commitment to a free India, it's truly inspiring. And it had a ripple effect for generations to come.
For sure. So stay with us, because in the next part of our deep dive, we're going to look at the impact of modernization and all the intellectual debates that shaped the nationalist movement. We'll see how Indians used the very tools the British introduced to fight back, and we'll delve into those philosophical shifts and the resurgence of traditional Indian thought. It's going to be an interesting one.
You know, it's amazing how these early nationalists, even with their different approaches, were all pushing for a stronger, more self-reliant India. They really set the stage.
Totally. It's inspiring to see how much they believed in India's potential. But hey, you mentioned something earlier about a modernization paradox. What's that all about? It sounds a little confusing.
It is a bit of a head scratcher. Basically, the tools of modernization that the British brought in, they were almost ironically used by Indians to challenge British rule. Kind of a twist.
Like they accidentally gave them the tools to fight back.
Yeah, you could say that. Think about the printing press, the telegraph. These innovations allowed nationalist ideas to spread so much faster across the country. They helped people communicate and build this sense of shared purpose, even when they were miles apart.
Oh, and what about the railroads? Didn't the British build those for their own economic reasons?
Exactly, but they ended up connecting people in ways that hadn't happened before. They became these accidental catalysts for national integration, you know, allowing for easier travel, trade, and the exchange of ideas. It helped tie this huge, diverse nation together.
Wow, so the very things meant to solidify British control actually helped fuel the movement for independence.
It speaks to the resilience of the Indian people. They didn't reject everything Western, but they adapted those elements to fit their own needs and goals. And it wasn't just physical tools. As more Indians got a Western education, they started critiquing the whole basis of British rule, using Western political philosophies like liberalism and democracy to argue for self-governance.
They used the colonizers' own ideologies against them. It's pretty
good. It was. And that clash of ideas led to this whole period of intellectual debate within India. It wasn't just about political strategy. It was about reevaluating India's own traditions and values alongside these new ideas.
Like a national soul searching, figuring out what it means to be Indian in a changing world.
Exactly. They were asking, what does it mean to be Indian now? How do we balance our ancient heritage with this new global reality? And this led to a revival of interest in those ancient texts and philosophies. Thinkers like Swami Vivekananda and Bal Gangadhar Tilak, they wanted to rediscover those traditional strengths and wisdom.
So it was more than just rejecting Western ideas. It was about finding a way to blend the old with the new, to build an Indian identity that was both modern and grounded in their past.
Absolutely. It was about reclaiming their own narrative, celebrating their achievements while embracing the possibilities of the future. This cultural and intellectual resurgence had a huge impact on the nationalist movement. It gave people the sense of pride and self-confidence.
Like rediscovering their own inner strength.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And that renewed self-belief gave them the courage to imagine an independent India free from British control.
This all makes me think about the Hindu Mahasabha again. Their ideology during this time was pretty complex, right?
It was. You have to remember that their ideology wasn't a single fixed thing. There were different opinions within the organization about what the role of Hinduism should be in an independent India. Some saw Hinduism as the core of Indian culture and felt that an independent India should reflect those specific values and traditions.
But weren't some people in the Mahasabha advocating for Hindu-Muslim unity? How does that fit in with their overall stance?
That's a really good question. It shows how much debate and complexity there was within the Mahasabha. While some pushed for unity and a shared national identity, others were more concerned with asserting Hindu dominance, sometimes even if it meant sidelining other religious communities. These different threads of thought within the Mahasabha would go on to have a big impact on how Hindu nationalism developed in India.
It sounds like this was a time of so many competing ideas and visions for the future, with both unifying and divisive forces at play. It's important to remember that nuance when looking back at these movements.
You're absolutely right. Recognizing that diversity of perspectives is crucial for any historical analysis. And remember, even though we've been talking about these important figures and organizations, the movement for a free India was really fueled by the hopes and dreams and sacrifices of everyday Indians.
It's so true. It's about the farmers who were struggling under unfair land systems, the weavers who lost their livelihoods because of British economic policies, the women who fought against societal norms, the students who risked everything for the cause of freedom. Their stories are what really capture the spirit of this era.
Right. Their collective struggle shows us that history isn't just made by famous people. It's made by the actions of everyday people. And India's struggle for independence is proof of that resilience and determination.
It's pretty amazing to see how their spirit ultimately shaped the fate of a whole nation. But I'm curious about how those individual stories and sacrifices turned into real action. What were some of the ways these groups resisted British rule and pushed for change?
That's a great question. And it leads us into the different strategies these early nationalists used, from things like petitions and boycotts to more extreme forms of protest. They tried everything they could to make their voices heard. We'll dive into that fascinating part of the movement in the next part of our deep dive.
Yeah, it's incredible how many different kinds of people were a part of this movement. It really shows the power of shared goals, even when people have different ways of going about it. But you were saying something about how they actually resisted British rule, the strategies they used. Tell me more about that. Like, what that looked like?
Well, they were really creative, these early nationalists. They knew they needed a bunch of different approaches to take on that British power structure. It wasn't going to be easy.
So what were some of their most effective methods?
One of the early strategies, and this was more the moderate style, was to actually work within the British system itself. They used petitions and formal appeals to voice their complaints and ask for changes. These were really well-written documents, you know, presented to the British Parliament or the Viceroy, pointing out things like unfair policies, economic exploitation, the lack of Indian representation in the government.
So trying to change things from within. Did it work?
It did, to a point. Their efforts did lead to some reforms, things like expanding the legislative councils to include a few Indian members, but it was never enough, you know. Those concessions didn't really address the core issues like self-governance and equality.
So how did the extremists react to that? They were more about taking direct action. Right.
The extremists felt that just sending petitions wasn't going to cut it. They wanted bolder actions to really shake things up. One of their big strategies was the Swadeshi movement. It was all about boycotting British goods and promoting Indian-made products instead.
Hitting them where it hurts their wallets.
Exactly. But the Swadeshi movement was about more than just economics. It was about national pride, about self-reliance. It was encouraging Indians to take back their economic power and support their own industries. It really resonated with people and became the symbol of resistance.
So they used economic tools to make a political statement. What about other ways to get people involved?
Well, they were big on raising public awareness and mobilizing people. The extremists knew they had to reach the masses to inspire that patriotic spirit and get everyone working towards the same goal. So they organized rallies, public meetings, processions, even used religious festivals and cultural events as platforms to spread their message.
Smart. Using existing events to reach a bigger audience. Kind of like using social media for activism today, but on a way bigger scale, I guess.
That's a good way to put it. They understood the power of storytelling and symbols to rally people, and while they mainly focused on nonviolent resistance, there were times when that frustration boiled over and led to more drastic actions.
Like violence.
Yeah, unfortunately. While most of them believed in peaceful methods, some individuals or groups within the extremist camp did resort to violence. targeting British symbols of authority or people they saw as representing that oppression. And of course, those actions were usually met with harsh crackdowns from the British, which just made the cycle of anger and resentment worse.
Sounds like a really tough situation to be in, trying to balance those ideals of nonviolence with the reality of living under such a powerful and often brutal colonial system.
You're right. It was a constant struggle. And sometimes that line between peaceful resistance and more extreme action became blurred. But understanding those complexities helps us appreciate the sacrifices they made and the courage it took to stand up to an empire.
Their struggle paved the way for India's independence, no doubt. But what about the long-term effects? How did their ideas and actions continue to shape India even after they gained freedom?
Their legacy is huge in so many ways. They really instilled that deep belief in democracy and self-governance. That vision of a free India where every citizen had a voice became the foundation of the country's political system.
So it wasn't just about getting rid of British rule. It was about creating a whole new system based on fairness and equality.
Exactly. And they also played a big part in shaping India's social and cultural landscape. That emphasis on education, social reform, helping marginalized communities, it all had a lasting impact.
So they were fighting for political freedom, but also for a society that was more just and equal for everyone.
Exactly. Their ideas and actions helped pave the way for movements that address things like caste discrimination, gender inequality, religious intolerance. They understood that true freedom wasn't just about political independence, but about ensuring social and economic justice for all Indians. It was a holistic vision.
Wow, what an amazing journey through this crucial period in Indian history. We've seen how nationalism grew, we've learned about the incredible people who challenged the way things were, and we've uncovered the many different ways they fought for their vision of a free India. It's clear that their struggle wasn't just about breaking free from colonial rule, but about building a new India that was democratic, just, and inclusive, a place where everyone had a chance to thrive.
It really shows the power of ideas, how important it is to work together, and that unwavering belief in a better future. And as you go about your lives, remember that the past is never truly gone. It shapes who we are, how we think, and the choices we make. Those early nationalists left an incredible legacy for India and for the world.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for taking us on this deep dive. It's been truly eye-opening and inspiring.
It's been my pleasure. Keep asking questions, keep learning, keep exploring. The more we understand history, the better equipped we are to face the present and build a future that we can all be proud of. Thanks for joining us.